We're going to call the State Government Finance Committee meeting to order. Members, we've got a full slate here this morning. We're going to start off by looking at the minutes. Representative Detmer, you want to move the minutes for March 16, 2016?
Yes, I move those minutes.
Representative Detmer moves the minutes for March 16, 2016. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The minutes are adopted for March 16, 2016. Members, in your packet, you are going to have a kind of history. Well, actually, we're going to start with Mr. Shepherd. You're going to provide us with a little history of the state auditor. Can you, some of this was said yesterday, but I just thought it would be helpful for Mr. Shepherd to give us an overview of how the state auditor's office has worked throughout time. So, Mr. Shepherd.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'm just going to highlight about half a dozen key places where the legislature either enacted or changed the laws governing the state auditor. The first was in 1858, the very first legislature, which assigned the first statutory duties to the state auditor. These duties primarily involved acting as a controller for the executive branch, giving advance approval to state expenditures, and they didn't involve the post-audit function that the auditor has today. In 1878, the legislature created the Public Examiner Office. That office was in the executive branch, and the legislature assigned that officer duties relating to post-audit of both state and local expenses. Then skipping ahead almost 100 years, in 1973, a law that Mr. Nobles referenced yesterday, there was a major state government reorganization bill. As part of the bill, the Department of Finance, now MMB, was created and given the responsibilities that it has today to for state accounting and the controller functions. The Office of the Legislative Auditor was created and given responsibility for post-audit of state agencies, and the state auditor was given responsibility for the audits of local governments. At that time, the bill enacted in 1973 created a revolving fund in the office of the state auditor that was they billed local government, the revenue received was appropriated statutorily to the state auditor through that revolving fund. That continued until 1989. There was a larger bill that year as part of the state government bill. There was an article that eliminated a lot of special funds and special revenue funds generally. So the state auditor revolving fund was abolished at that time, and the money that the state auditor received from counties and other units of local government for the audits was put in the general fund and appropriated directly each biennium. In 2003, the statutory language governing county audits was amended so that the state auditor may, instead of shall, do county audits. That was when the auditor had flexibility to allow counties to have private CPA firms, and the statute was changed to reflect that. In 2013, the financial structure was changed so that the revenue from county and other local government audits was deposited in a state auditor enterprise fund that was created in that bill instead of the general fund, and amounts in that enterprise fund are annually appropriated by the statute to the state auditor. And then in 2015, the counties were given authority to use a private CPA firm instead of the state auditor. So, Madam Chair, that's the highlights.
Thank you, Mr. Shepherd. Members, any questions at all? Okay. With that, we are going to do you have that ready?
Madam Chairman, yes.
Representative Kahn.
I've asked if anyone, and I'm sorry, it's a little bit late, so I admit, but I'm asked if anyone has asked the state auditor, what auditor's office, what their thoughts are on this issue.
On the bill, you mean?
Yes.
Well, we haven't gotten to that part yet, so now we're just doing an overview of the state auditor's budget. Representative Kahn, we had asked the state auditor, probably 2.5 weeks ago, to come to committee here today and actually do this But because the state auditor refused to come to committee, instead what we have done is we've put together our own overview okay. of her office. So with that, members, in your packet, you will find a handout that looks like this. It says the Office of the State Auditor Overview. Because the state auditor refused to come to the State Government Finance Committee, we have purview over her budget. We review not only her budget, but her operations overall. That's our responsibility, has been the responsibility of State Government Finance for as long as I can remember. And so because the state auditor refused to come, what we did is we went back to the 2013-2014 legislative session. This is the packet that her office handed out. And I thought it would be helpful for us to review it. So I'm going to have us start on the first page here, and we're going to get it up on the screens as well.
Hopefully.
As long as technology allows us. For those in the audience, you can grab a copy from the table and follow along with us that way, too. And I think I'm just going to start. So if you look on page one of the PowerPoint presentation here, it says that the state auditor provides oversight for over $20 billion in spending per year for over 3,300 local governments. So she doesn't only provide oversight to counties, but she also provides oversight to other units of local government. And we're in business. So if you turn to page two in your packet, in the state auditor's presentation from 2013, again, it reiterates that they do not only just counties, but they also have oversight over financial data for over 3,300 units of local government. This data is used by taxpayers, the legislature, women that's provided to us, the governor, media, researchers, state agencies, and more, with the idea of providing transparency and accountability for taxpayers. That's the responsibility of state government finance. That's why we have agencies come before us, is to have that transparency and accountability for the taxpayers that we represent. Then in the presentation from 2013, it went over the website that the state auditor has and providing comparison tools. Those go through page four, and then on page four, it talks about some of the kind of mechanics of the office, so that they receive reports on alleged misuse or theft of public funds. So local units of government, local officials, they must report evidence of theft or misuse of public funds. So must private CPA firms that are auditing local units of government. They're required to report any evidence of theft or misuse of funds. Taxpayers report alleged misuse of public funds as well. So you have three different sources in addition to the state auditor that are responsible for reporting any misuse of public tax dollars. If you look at the PowerPoint on page four, and it's number eight, it says that they conduct investigations, they assist with law enforcement and others, they provide training and education to local officials. So not just to the counties, but over 3,300 local units of government receive training and education from the state auditor's office. They refer cases to the county attorneys for possible criminal proceedings. If you go to page five in your handout, that has a list of their different investigations that you have here. You see that you've got St. Paul Public Schools, you've got Aiken County, you've got the City of Henning. You've got an Economic Development Authority, you've got a Firemen's Relief Association. That all falls under the purview of the state auditor. So if you look at the PowerPoint slide number 10, it says that they certify eligible cities for local government aid. So that's all of our cities and our counties that receive local government aid. That's all under the purview of the state auditor. And then says that they have the audit and the reporting requirement and so forth. So if you go to page six, another responsibility of the state auditor's office is certifying the volunteer fire relief associations. And I can't remember how many there are, but I see Ms. Lachesky is in the audience. Maybe she can yell out a number for us. How many fire relief associations are there?
Approximately 600.
We've got about 600 fire relief associations. That falls under the responsibility of the state auditor. Let's see, they have the safeguard of their pensions and providing transparency and so forth. So that's all part of the state auditor's responsibilities. On top of that, the state auditor is also responsible for tax increment financing. So they help local governments go through that whole process. They oversee the use of TIF funds and make sure that it's in compliance with state law and so forth. You'll see that all on PowerPoint slide number 12. And then on page 7, it says that they conduct the financial audits, including the single audit and so forth, all the things that we're already aware of. And members, I'm going to leave it to you to review the last several slides at your own time. I am going to highlight, though, on page 10. We've been trying to do a little research. I'm not sure if we have the answer yet, but in page 10 on slide number 19, the state auditor had requested for the transfer of the Job Z and Dairy Council oversight to somewhere else. We're not quite sure if that actually happened or where it went, so we're trying to figure out where that piece was. So I just thought that would be helpful. I wish that the state auditor had come herself to provide this for her staff, but we thought that this would be helpful at least at a minimum for you guys to see on what they do. So Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Right. Did want to just ask and find out, because there's some new standards with regard to reporting pensions that all local governments know are now going to be required to do under the new GASB rules, and if that would necessitate new reports, new oversight, operations. So it's kind of a new area that's being more exposed and so on to the public, but that may necessitate some greater oversight from her office as well.
Ms. Lachesky, did you want to come to the table and comment to that? Do you know what Ms. Representative Runbeck is referring to? But you'll have to come to the table. Sorry. And Representative Runbeck, I suspect we'll have to have you repeat, probably.
Yes, Madam Chair.
Welcome, Ms. Lachesky. Representative Runbeck, do you want to repeat your comment on new reporting requirements on pensions?
Thank you. Yes, wanted to ask about how the Office of the State Auditor is going to be required to do more oversight with regard to the new GASB, General Accounting Standards Boards, regarding pensions. It sounds like it would affect, many, many of the entities that she does audit. So what will be involved? What will the public see on that account?
Ms. Lachesky, if you can please state your name for the record.
My name is Susan Lachesky, and I'm the Executive Director of the Legislative Commission on Pensions and Retirement. Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Runbeck.
Right.
It is true that there is a new requirement under GASB that the cities report their pension costs differently than they have in the past. My guess is that'll just lead to more transparency on the topic. I actually have no idea how that's going to impact the auditor's job as it relates to auditing. My guess is the additional transparency would lead to the need for less oversight, but I'm guessing on that point. I could certainly get back to the committee on that topic if you'd like more information.
Representative Runbeck.
Madam Chair and Ms. Lachesky, yes, it would be helpful, I think, to be able to know what sort of documents, we'll be able to access and what information will be on that document.
Ms. Lachesky.
Madam Chair, Representative Runbeck, I think I would need to get back to you as far as when you ask the question about documents, you mean the financial statements from the cities and what that will show. Certainly, I can get back to you on that. I don't have that information right now, so I'd have to provide that later.
Madam Chair and Ms. Lachesky, that would
Representative
be very
Runbeck.
Appreciated. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Ms. Lachesky.
You're welcome.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'm not sure if anybody can answer this question. This is a short one. On the slide 3 on page 2, and a couple other places it talks about 3,300 units of local government. Do we know if that includes the 20-plus counties that are done currently by CPAs?
Representative Petersburg, I'm fairly confident that we can say yes, that is the in case that is indeed the case. However, we received information yesterday that Hennepin County, which is one of the 28, they had not been reviewed since at least 2009.
Okay. It just seems a little confusing because it says on that slide that the auditor is the only entity that collects that, and that seems like that might be a little misleading. So thank you.
Thank you. Members, any other questions on that piece? All right. We are going to go. I've asked Ms. Roberts to provide us a history of funding for the state auditor. Ms. Roberts, can you lead us off, please?
Madam Chair and members, you'll have in your packet a handout that says Office of the State Auditor Funding History. And I'm going to just give a start at the current situation and go backwards. And I'm not going to read this entire thing to you because I think some of it has been is very familiar at this point. In the most recent budget session, in the 2015 session, the state auditor received an appropriation of $4.4 million from the general fund, and the only change item in the general fund appropriation was a $174,000 increase for staff retention in the audit practice, pension, and government information divisions. But as you know, the majority of the OSA's funding is from a statutory appropriation from the Audit Enterprise Fund, which was estimated at the end of session at $13.86 million for the biennium. And as you also know, the legislature amended the statutory requirements for county audits, allowing a county to choose to have an audit performed by a private CPA firm. And so as a result of that, in the legislative tracking, we showed a reduction in the tails in the out years by $250,000 in fiscal year 2018 and $726,000 in fiscal year 2019. Those were the numbers that were identified in the fiscal note on this bill as a result of some reduced work in the audit practice division. And then going into the 2013 session, I think Mr. Shepherd already reviewed that this was the session that the funding was restructured from a direct general fund appropriation to the new revolving fund. And as a result, the office's general fund appropriation was reduced by $13.1 million, and that was offset by the revenues that would have gone to the general fund. So we showed that as a net zero cost to the general fund. And at the same time, there was also a planned increase for staff retention of $1.4 million, and that would have been reflected in the new Audit Enterprise Fund and would have to be covered by the fees charged by that fund. There were two other changes in the 2013 session. There was a $156,000 general fund reduction from the transfer of the Jobs Ease oversight function to the legislative auditor, and then there was a $250,000 special revenue impact for the small cities and town accounting system. In the 2011 session, the state auditor's office received $17.3 million from the general fund, which was a reduction of about 5%. And one thing I would note that we had to consider when the state auditor's office was funded by the general fund, anytime we did reductions to the office, we needed to calculate the revenue lost also, because if you reduced the funding for the audit practice division, then that meant that they would also have reduced revenues to the general fund. So that was one thing that we had to consider. In the 2010 session, a supplemental budget year, there was an additional reduction of $110,000 for the 10-11 biennium and $156,000 for the 12-13 biennium. And then the other thing that happened that year was the tax bill created a Council on Local Results and Innovation to develop a standard performance measures for local governments. And the tax bill also created a statutory general fund appropriation of $2,000 per year to create funding for the state auditor's responsibilities for this council. And I believe that provision was never discussed in the State Government Finance Committee. And then the final year that I'm noting was the 2009 session, which would have been the 2010-11 budget. And then that year, the OSA received a $19 million general fund appropriation, which was an increase of $680,000. And those increased funds were one-time dollars that were allocated for auditing the federal stimulus oversight activities and reporting. And so, and those dollars were also part of the audit practice division, so they were recovered through the fees that were charged. And I, if members want me to go back further, I'm certainly willing to do that if anybody wants a further history beyond the 2009 session. The next thing in the packet is the chart that's called, that's entitled the Office of the State Auditor Appropriation History. And what this shows you is first the direct appropriation from the general fund. And so you'll see in 2014 the drop off because of the change in funding. And one thing I would like just to note is, so the direct appropriation is the amount that shows up in the state government finance bill. And we appropriate one amount for the Office of the State Auditor. So that's the level of control that the legislature has chosen. In addition to that direct appropriation, there are several statutory appropriations, which means they're not done in the omnibus bill, but they're actually in statute, and so they continue every year. They don't need to be reauthorized every year. The first one you'll see is that local government performance measures that I just noted, the $2,000 per year. The second one is the audit practice fund. And these numbers, because they're statutory appropriations, for example, with the audit practice, this number reflects what we were tracking during session. But the actual numbers at the end of the year are going to be different because it's an enterprise fund. But this is just to give you a picture of what we were tracking at that point. The third one is a special revenue fund for the TIF oversight activities. And I've shaded fiscal year 2014 and 2015 because I'm a little unsure on those numbers. I've taken them from the consolidated fund statement. Those were the years that we had the new budget system, the very first years, and the non-general fund numbers were sometimes difficult to find. So I just wanted to say I'm not entirely sure on those. And then the last one is a one-time appropriation for the city and town accounting system software. That's the $250,000. Moving on to the next chart, the expenditure history. This chart will just show you the actual expenditures broken down by budget activity and fund. So you can see where most of the activity is clearly in the audit practice budget activity, but you can also see sort of what the allocations are or how the money is spent for the other budget activities. And these numbers are taken from the MMB Transparency website, which is available to the public. And then the final information in this packet is the FTE information, which was provided by Minnesota Management and Budget. And the reason that the data only goes back to 2012, MMB did provide additional years of data, but because we switched accounting systems in 2012, the ability to match up some of the codes doesn't work that well, so I thought it was cleaner to just start at 2012.
Members, any questions for Ms. Roberts? Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Roberts, question for you. There has been discussion of this lawsuit that the auditor has undertaken, and I believe the cost of that is somewhere in the $108,000. And I'm just curious, where in their budget does that money come from? What was it originally designed to do? And if you could just maybe shed some light on that.
Madam Chair and Representative Nash, I believe the expenditures for the private law firm are coming out of the Constitutional Office budget activity.
Madam Chair.
Representative Nash.
And Ms. Roberts, could you describe what that fund does or what it's there for? And if you have to maybe get it at a later date, that's fine, too. I mean, it's there's a lot of moving parts, I know.
Madam Chair and Representative Nash, so the Constitutional Office budget activity is part of the overall general fund appropriation to the OSA. The legislature does not, as I said, they give one appropriation to the office. They don't. We haven't done specific appropriations for the different budget activities within the office. So like other state agencies, the OSA can determine how to allocate that budget. Reading from the submission for the governor's budget from this last session, for the Constitutional Office at a glance, says this budget activity provides senior level management for six divisions within the OSA, supports the state auditor service on six state boards and one state council, conducts outreach and education to local elected officials, local government, finance professionals, and the public, works with the legislature and governor on appropriations and policy issues around OSA oversight, and works with the media statewide to achieve transparency for local government finances.
Representative Nash.
Madam Chair, thank you. And Ms. Roberts, thank you. Maybe I could get a copy of that, because I didn't hear in there that it was designed for legal fees, but I guess it's just sort of a large fund that can be available to things for at the discretion of the auditor, I guess. But thank you very much.
Members, any other questions for Ms. Roberts? Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So can you describe the complications or difficulties the OSA had from using the general fund and why they wanted to move to an enterprise fund?
Well, Ms. Roberts, that would be a great question for the state auditor, but she didn't come today.
What are some complications of using the general fund?
Well, Representative Schultz, we're going to be getting to that, because in the testimony that was heard on the bill from the last time around, these are the three reasons that OSA staff cited for the change. Said that revenues and expenditures would be tracked together, said that it would reduce the general fund appropriation, which is, you know, just changing the source, basically, because you're not actually changing tax dollar expenditures. And then it would stabilize audit rates for city and counties, which I think leads into kind of the next issue that I wanted to cover. Members, you should, I believe this is in your packet, you should have a letter that the state auditor provided to Commissioner Myron France, who's the commissioner of MMB. And in that letter, it talks about the rates that the state auditor is going to, how much she's going to increase rates for hourly audit rates by approximately 6%. Now, I will tell you, it starts with the Office of the State Auditor, State Auditor Enterprise Fund. It's the one that has this on there. And if you go to page 3 in that packet, you'll see a letter from the State Auditor to Commissioner Myron France, MMB. And it cites that she is going to be increasing the hourly audit rates that she has. Now, by Minnesota State Statute 6.581 Subdivision 4, she's required to provide this information to the House of Representatives and the Senate. We have looked through our files and have not seen any notification of that to us. So we're still trying to figure out why this was not reported to us of this rate increase. But she's looking to increase the audit rates by 6%. These are the reasons that she cited in that report. So, Representative Schultz, any further comments? And the reason that I wanted to show this is that, as I'm going to be presenting my bill here shortly, the claim of going to an enterprise fund is that it would stabilize rates, that it would be more cost effective. But in the end here, you're seeing a 6% increase in rates for the audits, and we have continued to provide increases in general fund funding to the state auditor's office as well. Members, any questions? With that, members, I'd also like to direct you to, in your packet, there should be a handout that says Serendipity Grant. And this was an issue that I wanted to discuss with the state auditor. This is a grant that her office has been involved in, and some of the what happened on this, this is with a partnership with the University of Minnesota, the state auditor, she had requested $150,000 from the legislature for a consultant for the infrastructure stress study, and if I remember correctly, and staff will correct me, she was not provided that funding, but this project still went ahead. So my question for the state auditor would have been, how was this then funded? Was this taken out of her office? Was she then using, how much of staff time was being used? She had offered at one point up staff to do certain requirements. I'm wondering, out of her state budget, how much was of time of staff, of state auditor staff, and other resources from the auditor's office were expended for this grant. Unfortunately, she's not here to provide that information, and that's part of the reason why I think we need to get back to having this come out of the general fund so we have greater oversight and review of these things. When I first took over as state government finance chair, I asked non-fiscal staff to go over with me what were the most recent changes, you know, what has happened here in state government finance from a historical perspective. And when we got to the part of this office had a change from going from the general fund to the enterprise fund, that just kind of stuck out at me as something that we need to take a closer look at. After looking at this, getting information on the Serendipity Grant and a host of other things, that's why I am putting forward with my bill that I have. I think it would just give the taxpayers some greater accountability and transparency. And so, members, if you have any questions on the Serendipity Grant, I can only give you what I've got in the information before me. But otherwise, I think that I'm going to move House File 3077. Oh, Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm apologizing. I'm just finishing reading the letter that's in the packet from the state auditor to Commissioner Franz. And I guess I have a question for staff, or if you know the answer for this. You reference Minnesota Stat 6.581. And it's also referenced in the letter that is addressed to Commissioner Franz. At the very bottom paragraph, it says that they are required, the OSA is required to report their new audit rates to legislative committees with oversight, which would be this committee, as well as I'm sure others, 30 days prior to their implementation. Pursuant to noncompliance with that provision of Statute 6.581 and no evidence to the contrary, would any audit fees collected with the new rate structure not be in compliance with state statute?
Mr. Shepherd, I don't know if you want to comment on that.
Madam Chair and members, the law that governs the reporting doesn't specify a remedy. So I think one could make that argument that because if there weren't compliance with the procedures, that the fees shouldn't take effect. But the statute just doesn't address that one way or the other.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Shepherd, is there, in your experience with these type of matters, limited as it might be, in regard to my question, is there any precedent for any branch of government in the state of Minnesota not complying with the rule of law being allowed to proceed based upon a letter that
references a change in the manner that they coordinate activities with the public.
Mr. Shepherd.
Madam Chair and members, I'm not aware of any court rulings or attorney general opinions or anything else that would give us legal guidance on how something like this, the failure, if there were a failure to report, how it would be enforced or what the consequence of that would be. As a practical matter, the Legislative Reference Library tracks all these mandated reports and usually contacts the agencies after a couple of weeks to try to get the reports because they want them for their record that they maintain. But I'm not aware of any legal proceedings or anything that would offer guidance to how this would be interpreted if, in fact, it wasn't reported.
I just have one follow-up, Madam Chair.
I represent Albright.
Then would it be, and I know it's highly speculative, but would it be appropriate or would it be within the purview of a county that would receive a audit billing recently completed by the OSA to deny payment based upon noncompliance with state statute?
Mr. Shepherd.
Madam Chair and members, again, because there isn't really any judicial guidance on that, I think we don't know what would happen. I think that at best the county would probably, if they succeeded, would succeed only with respect to the increment of the increase. And I honestly would just have to speculate, and I don't think it would be particularly helpful in the absence of any controlling decisions.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think that's the answer I was looking for. And then, again, Madam Chair, I know it's been mentioned before, but I'm dumbfounded at the code of silence that has fallen over the OSA in recent months with regard to communication with this committee as well as others asking questions of the office. One of the things that she and the OSA office mentioned at the outset was a greater desire for transparency, and it certainly doesn't seem to be coming through in some of the communications we received lately.
Members, any other questions? Representative Schultz.
Thank you. So I don't know how the OSA helped support this research project that we've been discussing, the Serendipity Grant, but it looks like this is it resulted in the interactive map. If you guys went to the OSA's map of infrastructure needs, which I think it's been gotten a lot of positive response and utilization. I don't know if your counties have looked at it, but I applaud the OSA for if they did contribute resources for getting it done, because this data didn't exist before. And it looks like the University of Minnesota received a $20,000 grant to help cover some of the costs, but you're right, it's not clear what the OSA contributed, but I'm very glad that the project succeeded and that we have the results we do.
And again, is there anyone from the State Auditor's Office here to answer any of the questions that we have? Okay. Members, I am going to Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just looking at that letter from November 10th. Regarding audit hourly rates from the State Auditor's Office to Myron France. Just for my understanding, would it be fair to say that the major problem you have with the letter is the lack of, what you see is a lack of communication? You're willing to discuss the audit hourly rates and the proposed increase, that sort of thing, but you want to be able to discuss that with the auditor's office. Is that a correct understanding?
Well, Representative Johnson, my concern is that there's just a clear lack of transparency. We are the committee that has oversight over the state auditor's office. Here we have a 6% increase. These were some of the questions that we had asked as far back as August. Of the state auditor's office of what are going to be the rates and what's going to be reflected in that. We've had several counties that have asked for that information and have not been able to receive it. And so I think from several different fronts, it presents a major problem.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I understand it, but it sounds like you're willing to look at the factors and have an honest discussion about them.
Well, I think that always having a conversation about what is part of these factors. In particular, I'm interested in the increase in compensation because, as you know, every state agency was provided with extra funding to cover those compensation costs. So in particular, I'm kind of concerned that there is now a result of a 6% increase for funding that was already provided. So I'm just a little concerned about that, but we can't have that conversation because we don't have the state auditor here.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yep. So, members, I'm going to move my bill, House File 3077. And this is just what we've already been discussing at length here, is it's changing it, the funding source for the state auditor from an enterprise fund to the general fund like it was in the past. I am going to have us go over amendments. And one of the amendments, I'll start with the amendment that I have. I'm going to move the A1 amendment. It should be in your packet. And basically, this is just in response to the legislative auditor's report that we've heard here both in February and then yesterday. This just makes sure that we have a strategic plan. That was one of the recommendations that the legislative auditor's report was. It's just adding that language to the bill. So, members, questions or comments on the A1 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A1, anyone from the audience that wishes to speak to the A1 amendment? Okay, members, all those in favor of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The A1 amendment is adopted. Members, we also have two other amendments in your packet from Representative Schultz. We have an A2 and an A3. Representative Schultz, which one do you are you?
I'd like to move the A3 amendment.
Okay, and so we're getting rid of the A2 one?
Right.
Okay. Representative Schultz moves the A3 amendment. Representative Schultz, to your amendment.
So this is an amendment. I know I was a little surprised at the cost of the audits, both from the OSA and from the CPA firms. So there's no currently guarantee that counties go out and get bids when they want their annual financial audit conducted. So this is really, I think, will provide sound financial advice to them that they should go out and request bids for their audits. If they have a 2 or 3 year contract, that's fine. But when they go out to renew a contract, they should get bids from CPA and from the OSA.
Okay. Members,
and if they, and I'm sorry, one other thing. If they only use the OSA, I don't think they're required to go out and get bids. But if they want to use the CPA.
Okay. Members, questions? Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Schultz, I note on line 1.8 and 1.9, with no specificity, how many bids or requests would be appropriate to solicit?
Representative Schultz.
I think they open it up and they would consider all bids that come in. So they may only get one bid, like Hennepin County. There may only be one firm that can conduct the audit.
Okay. Representative Albright.
You also mentioned in the earlier statement that if the OSA is requested to do the bid, that they're not necessarily required to provide them with an RFP response. Is that correct?
That's right. It's
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's open to the state auditor to submit a bid.
Representative Albright.
Would that bid also be open to the public?
Representative
open to
Schultz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Open to the public?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Members, any other questions? Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know. Perhaps some nonpartisan research could help, but request for proposal, I mean, is this a non-standard approach to doing request for proposal?
Mr. Shepard,
it just seems that allowing the state auditor the opportunity to see the bids and then to respond to them would not be traditional at all. That this goes beyond anything, you know, anything that I understand happens in that kind of a situation. So it becomes subject to negotiation. I mean, obviously, that would be what you're setting up is an opportunity for the state auditor to challenge the bids, to bid lower, to you know, engage in a whole process of discussion about the bid. When they're usually closed and they're not available for public scrutiny. But I may be unaware of how the procedure is normally done as well.
Mr. Shepherd, do you know if bidding process usually is a closed process or not?
Madam Chair and Representative Runbeck, the normal process would depend on whether something was a bid. A bid usually means something where you've specified all of the terms in the bid solicitation document, and when you get responses back, you don't negotiate them. Mm-hmm. And typically, it's a lowest price, lowest responsible bidder situation. This gives flexibility to do a traditional bid like that, or to do a request for proposal, which implies a negotiation process in which the county would get responses back and then would be able to negotiate with the responders. And typically a request for proposal document would state the terms that the county was looking for, but they would be able to negotiate them with the people that responded. This situation, as you note, is different from others because you are involving the state auditor in a way that if a county was going out for consulting engineer services or something like that, you wouldn't have the state auditor involved in this way. So I think you're correct that it's different.
Mm-hmm. Representative Rumbeck.
Well, so Madam Chair, it just seems it seems like it's meant to sort of be, you know, presented to allow the state auditor to have a lot more leeway and you know, investment, I guess, or involvement in the bidding process. So I mean, it seems an unusual latitude to give state agency in a bidding process.
Can I respond to that?
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I don't think the state auditor would necessarily see the bids of the other bidders. I think it would be I envision it as the bids are submitted and then the county sees all the bids, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the state auditor sees the bids and is allowed to submit a lower bid. But that, apparently they can negotiate once they see the bid with any of the bidders to get the best price, which is, I think, the goal is to get the best price. So
I think Representative Schultz, I think where the confusion comes in, so if you look on line 9, it says open to the state auditor for submission and response. Mm-hmm. And as it's written, it's to me, my interpretation is just a regular Joe, is that saying that she gets to see all of the bids and requests for proposals.
Oh, Madam Chair,
that's not your intent.
No, I think the intent is that it's open to the state auditor to bid and to respond to a bid. Okay. That's how I interpret that.
Okay. Representative Nash.
Madam Chair, thank you. And to the author, Representative Schultz, a couple questions. Putting my former mayor's hat on, you know, you receive these bids at a local unit of government, and there are requirements. And Mr. Shepherd, I'll phone a friend as we need, but there are requirements. And your amendment doesn't really address those. You know, some are you must take the lowest bid. And, you know, I appreciate the language that you have here because it seems that, you know, that's sort of reinforcing the whole genesis of the bill, which is to open things up to market forces and allow counties to find lower pricing, which I think was the intent from Representative Howe last year. But I just think there's some awkwardness in this that really deserves a little bit of tune-up, and I would encourage you maybe to withdraw the amendment and tune it up a little bit to make it a little bit more clear as to what is supposed to happen in the process of opening bids, awarding of the bid, and tighten up the language around open to the state auditor, because as I understand it, and Representative Howe, you can jump in, but that she already has the opportunity to bid on the work as it is.
Okay. We've got Representative Lunan, Howe, and Kahn, excuse me. Representative Lunan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The state auditor has the latitude to decide to not submit a proposal. My hypothetical question is, what happens if you have a county or an entity that goes out and they get no bids?
Representative Schultz.
Then the state auditor has to do it.
If they get no bids?
If they get no bids, my concern is that do we compel the auditor then to come in and say, you have to contract to do the audit then?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, what do they do now? Has that ever happened? That no one, they haven't been able to secure services from a financial auditor for those that want to use a CPA?
Representative Lunan.
You have to ask the auditor.
Is your concern is that then it puts the state auditor in a position where they could charge even more?
The county, whether they don't have someone to do the audit. So you go through and you right now the state auditor is selecting what counties are going to audit based on some, I'm assuming, a viable basis. Okay, so we get some remote county that is being audited right now and goes out for it wouldn't be an actual RFP, it would be a bid, I'm assuming. So they don't have to take the lowest bid, they can take the best value, the most qualified bid. But if no one bids, can we compare with the state auditors that will you still be auditing that county then? That's just my question. Oh,
so what you're, because now I see what you're saying, because as this amendment is drafted, whether a county wants to use a CPA firm or not, you are actually requiring them to seek a bid.
Right.
Madam Chair, it's only if they want to use a CPA firm do they go out. If they want to stay and continue to use the OSA, they're not required to go out and bid.
But Representative Schultz, that's not how the amendment is actually drafted. So the amendment is drafted as whether you want to use a CPA firm or not, you're required to put out a bid or request.
Well, that's not my intent.
Okay. Representative, I've got did you want to? Yeah, wait? You're
no,
next
I'll
on
wait.
The list after.
I'm sorry.
Okay, sorry. Representative Howe.
Thank you, and Madam Chair. And I think my question is probably for staff, but in my experience in city government anyway, it usually is when you reach a threshold of a monetary amount, you're required to go out for a quote or a bid, and I think there's different standards for that and different qualifiers. Could Mr. Shepherd help me with that as far as what the requirements are once you reach a certain threshold, or doesn't this fall into those requirements?
Mr. Shepherd.
Madam Chair and Representative Howe, the Uniform Municipal Contracting Law has the thresholds that you mentioned for goods and services and some services such as construction services, but the Uniform Municipal Contracting Law does not apply to professional services such as these. And so the thresholds that you're used to working for in city government in goods and certain services, I believe, would not apply here.
Thank you.
Representative, okay. Representative Kahn.
Well, first of all, as I explained yesterday, I've been involved in going, I've been on every side of this issue in the course of doing this. And I know the chair came to me yesterday to sign on the bill, and I wasn't quite ready to because I really wanted to see what the state auditor thought about it first. Fortunately, with the constraints of time, I didn't get to talk to her. I agree with the chair that I'm, having been a previous chair of this committee, I really think that the state auditor should have come to this meeting. I think it's kind of offensive to the legislature that she didn't. I also like the idea of the Schultz Amendment in that we want to get the lowest reputable bid for counties to do. I think that was the point of the Howe Amendment, that some felt they were being overcharged by the state auditor and they could get a responsible bid going out by themselves. I think the Schultz Amendment puts a reasonable front on the whole thing in terms of, instead of just picking a CPA, they should have either an RFP you know, again, I'm not aware of the differences between this or a bid proposal. And I think that what we want to do, and I'm sure, having worked with Mr. Shepherd for years, he could fix this amendment in about a minute. But what I think we want to do is we want the county not just to choose a CPA firm, but to do some kind of bid or RFP process, and to then have the state auditor also be able to submit a bid in this process. I don't think it's necessary for the state auditor to see the bids in advance. I agree that that's, although when you look at, if we're doing this as a general fund appropriation, it's kind of hard for the state auditor to have any motive to underbid and so forth. But I think the process that makes sense to me is to have a pool of bids coming out and the state auditor also being able to put a bid in, but to have them all happen simultaneously. And I'm sure Mr. Shepherd could construct the amendment to do that. And then I would hope that we would vote for the amendment, and then I hope that we would vote for the bill.
Okay, I've got Representative Howe and Representative Albright, and then if there's, I'm going to ask for anybody from the public if they wish to comment on this amendment. Representative Howe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My concern here is it doesn't, so if I go out for, if the county goes out for a bid, does this make it that they have to go out for an annual bid? I mean, we heard from the auditor, the legislative auditor, and I think we've heard from the counties also that normally they enter into a multi-year bid because it's you need to have some relationship with the county for some period of time. This doesn't address that. Does that mean I could go out and get a 10-year bid and lock it in for 10 years? And I don't think that's healthy. It doesn't. This amendment doesn't give us any guidance in that realm at all, and I'm a little I just don't think this is crafted well enough to go forward. I agree that something needs to be done here in order to give that scope, because otherwise it appears to me at my first glance is we'd almost have to do, because you got to have an annual bud audit, it almost transfers all the way down that you're going to use an annual bid process, and that's not healthy for anyone involved.
Representative Kahn, to that.
Well, in answer to that, there was some request from the auditor to say that when she put out bids that they would be on a three-year, you know, in the bid, that it would be on a three-year basis, and that was turned down somehow. Sorry, I haven't followed this to the extent that I should have. But, I mean, the concept is that it's not to the advantage of the county to go for a 10-year bid or anything like that. And so I think what the practice, just leave it to what makes sense to the people doing it. Remember that we are here every year, and if we don't like the way it's done, it's done. But I like the idea of the bill going forward with some concept of when you're not using the state auditor, you use a competitive bid process. And we have many steps to be able to refine the language. I hope that what I said is kind of what we want to do, and I think we can, and I think Mr. Shepherd can give us the language that would do that, and it's not precisely right, but I don't see a county making, I don't see anything in this process making sense to go for a 10-year bid, but not having to go out every year if you have it also makes sense.
Representative Albright, and then we're going to hear from the folks in the audience, and then we'll get Representative Nelson. Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the author of the amendment, Representative Schultz, as I'm looking at the amendment, what's already in statute, and bear with me as I kind of work through this together here, it says the county must have a financial audit. The county may choose to have the audit performed by the state auditor or may choose to have the audit performed by a CPA firm meeting the requirements of Section 326A.05. Now, what that doesn't say, but it implies, is that inherent to the county process, the counties themselves have rules, procedures, and statutory responsibilities for how they go about submitting and requesting RFPs and or bids. We agree on that. And so then to add a layer at this juncture that may be ambiguous in some people's minds, it's certainly ambiguous in the minds around the table here, I think it also would confuse the county in terms of what statute they're actually supposed to follow, their own counties or the states, in terms of how they collect the bids or the RFPs. And so from the standpoint of, I certainly embrace transparency. I'm not against that at all, but in the context of what's already in statute and adding two sentences that might mitigate the efforts for the counties to complete the task that they are charged with in a manner that is already in their county constitutions, I think it might be more complicated for the effort that we want to make sure that they uphold. And so I'm certainly happy to work with you to, you know, make it more robust in terms of, but after, I think, consultations with the counties would be, I think, a worthwhile endeavor just to find out what they would already know to be true in terms of how they would collect that data and then how they move forward to make it more robust, to include the OSA in that process as well. So I just offer my assistance to you going forward, and we can put this on at some other time to the file as well.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I think after conferring with Mr. Shepherd, I think if we're allowed to make some changes to this amendment to appease and address these concerns now, I would suggest that we look at the A2 amendment and take the last sentence. A county must send the notice to the state auditor and allow the state auditor to respond to the solicitation is a better sentence and offers clarity than to the second phrase on line 1.9, open to the state auditor for submission and response. And then we could modify line 1.8 and say something like this, and Mr. Shepherd can may be able to help me with this, but say if counties pursue a CPA, bids or requests for proposals for an annual financial audit must be solicited by public notice.
Okay. Well, here's what we're going to do. We're going to, whoa. Mm-hmm. Welcome.
Listen.
We're going to hear from anybody that wishes to testify on this issue. And then I'm going to have Representative Schultz have you repeat what you're looking to change. But I will tell you this. This bill, I haven't mentioned this in the motion, this bill is going to be laid over. So rather than us doing this on the fly, I would feel more comfortable that we kind of work on this and give Mr. Shepherd more time, quite honestly, too. Mm-hmm. So I think that would be better. But if there's anyone wishing to speak to this bill from the audience, please come forward. Welcome. Morning. Please state your name for the record and who you represent.
Morning, Chair Anderson, members of the committee. My name is Matt Hilgart. I work for the Association of Minnesota Counties. The Association of Minnesota Counties represents all 87 Minnesota counties and has been around since 1909. I'm here along with Chisago County Administrator Bruce Messelt, and I'll be very quick and let Bruce kind of delve into the specifics of this provision. But I first want to thank Representative Schultz. I feel bad. I emailed her late last night saying that counties may have concerns with this amendment, and she was very communicative with me, and I met with her earlier this morning to discuss some of those concerns in person. So with that, the first amendment, the A2 amendment, we had initial concerns about the contract length, duration limitations that were placed on it, along with the notice requirement, because we felt it was redundant since counties were already going to be notifying the auditor every 2 years of whether or not they were going with a CPA firm or not. So thank you, Representative Schultz, for the A3 amendment. To this, we had some concerns about the RFP process. It's a little bit tricky because current statutes already dictate through the Uniform Municipal Contracting Law what counties and municipalities have to do when they're doing their bidding. It does not talk about professional services. So that is lawyers and, in this case, an auditor. So in that, in consultation with Mr. Shepherd, there's no municipal professional servicing contract statutes that address that. This language would be completely unique to the contracting process for professional services. I want to be clear to say that is not to say that our members don't already do this. I tried to survey very quickly in the limited time we had Just a very quick survey of our counties. I got two responses, which is by no means indicative of all of our counties. But there was one county that said, yes, we already go through the RFP process, and there was another county that says, no, we have a firm that's been doing it that we trust, has low prices, that we've gotten to know, that knows our county very well, and we've gone with them. So this would be creating a new mandate specific to contracting for professional service that is, in our opinion, unnecessary and might be, you know, a waterfall in the future to open this up to all professional services, i.e. lawyers. Most importantly, though, and I don't want to create this doomsday atmosphere for the RFP process, but I think it goes back to equity, which I have to believe at from the actions taken by this legislature last year, was that for the first time in a long time, the actions were to put counties on the same step and footing as local governments. As the state auditor's website says, the state auditor's responsibilities extend to cities, township, school district, fire relief association, pension funds, housing redevelopment authorities, port authorities, soil and water conservation districts, and approximately 150 other special taxing districts. So counties are by and large not unique to the legislative or the Office of the State Auditor's oversight, even though we're responsible for 60% of their fund. Taking this just at face value, it looks like yet another specific provision just addressing counties. And so we would ask that the law create uniformity among local units of government and consistency. I'll now defer to Chisago County Administrator Bruce Messel for more specifics, if you don't mind, Madam Chair.
Mr. Messel, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and who you represent.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Bruce Messel, and first of all, I was going to say Aaron Gobra, but I think I think I got beat to it. I thought I had good green, but I serve as the administrator of Chisago County, Minnesota, and also I'm here to represent AMC as well as the Minnesota Association of County Administrators. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on House File 3077 as well as the amendment, and thank you, Representative Schultz, for the opportunity to work with AMC on that. Real briefly, Chisago County is located just north of Washington County with 55,000 residents and growing. Thank you, Representative Detmer, for representing our part of our area. We are considered at times both a suburban, exurban county as a ring county around the metro, but also times predominantly a rural or ag county, especially in the north. First, I want to predicate my comments by noting that Chisago County currently utilizes the Office of the State Auditor for our annual auditing services. We are happy with those services. They have included adjustments by the auditor for timeliness and for cost over the last several years. We also have no plans whatsoever to seek a private auditing firm in the near future for our auditing services. That being said, we have significant concerns that this particular amendment puts us, again, on an unlevel and unfair playing field with respect to the other local units of government. Why are only 87 counties out of all of the hundreds of local units of government now being required to do a mandatory a selection process where it hasn't been required in the past for the counties that were exempted from the OSA, and you're not requiring it of school districts, townships, cities, special taxing districts, and I could go on and on. That doesn't mean it's not a good practice, and in fact, it is a good best practice. In Chisago County's situation, our attorney believes that we should have no evergreen contracts or professional service agreements. As a result, as Representative Howe said, we have local requirements for competitive bidding. We take what is in the competitive bidding process for goods and some services and apply it to professional and technical services. Basically, it requires that we review every 3 years our professional and technical service agreements. That's a best practice. It is not required by statute, and it's not required for all other professional and technical services. As a result, we do have some significant concerns to adding this amendment to House File 3077. In particular, I just want to note a couple for you. First, to our knowledge, and I think you've heard it here, statutes do not bind any other activity under professional and technical service agreements to competitive bidding requirements. That's not for architects, engineers, municipal finance advisors, outside legal counsels, professional development providers. Any of those would not be subject to this, only CPA firms. After all, when you think about this, when is the last time your city had to be required to competitively bid for legal services or for specialized engineering services, for instance, for bridge construction, or even for your on-call electrician or plumber, which, unfortunately, if you have an old building, you have to have. These types of professional and technical services are different than what is in the Uniform Contracting Law, which means respect to materials, goods, and services. It's also not found when you deal with competitive bidding for contracts for constructions of roads, trails, or buildings. These professional technical services are often either reoccurring annually or some cycle, or they're provided on a retainer as needed basis. They're often predicated upon highly specialized knowledge and professional objective and trusted advice from these service professionals, i.e. they don't necessarily fit into the lowest cost, cheapest bid model. Second, the statutes also do not require that any other local unit of government would have to follow such onerous and restrictive requirements when dealing with CPA firms. Third, you have to remember that nearly 30 Minnesota counties have already been allowed to contract with private CPA firms without these onerous and restrictive conditions on them for many years running. To our knowledge, no problem has ever been identified from those past practices of those counties and from the experiences of all of the cities and the townships and the school districts where they've had a problem not using the best practices model versus the required model. And finally, fourth, under the current statute, including the newly approved statute from last year, which allows counties to do competitive or allows counties to go to private firms, I just want to note that this doesn't have to be mandated to be done. When we do a professional technical services agreement, it is a public document. It is available for anybody, including public agencies and regulatory agencies, to review. And the state auditor, under both their current statutory authority as well as their future statutory authority, can obviously make comments, recommendations, make suggestions for changes if they feel the contract is insufficient, if it's overly priced. That can be part of their review process. That's not something that has to be added to statute to occur. Most counties do actually use a best practices model, and I think that that is something that we can encourage. Again, in Chisago County, we are pretty serious about making sure we do this right. However, we also don't want to be rash and make it a knee-jerk change. We are electing to stay with the state auditor for the foreseeable future for auditing services. I'm pleased that we are very happy with that and that we will do it. We also believe that we need to let the statutory changes play out at least for the next 3 years before looking at any knee-jerk reactions or making rash decisions. We would respectfully encourage that the state legislature do the same and don't think about imposing additional and unnecessary restrictions not only on Minnesota's counties, or only on Minnesota's counties, and also only on this particular service. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Messel. I have Representative Nelson and then Representative Lunan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess the comment I was going to make or the question I was going to ask is with all the talk here about the fuzzy language in House File 3, that it seemed to me that House File 2, that sentence that Representative Schultz talked about, seems to be more clear about the intention about having the auditor being able to bid along with CPA firms, and I agree with what some of the stuff saying that it's a little fuzzy at what the intention is with in line 1.9 about it. It could be read as that the CPA, or excuse me, the OSA has to or has the ability to look at the bids and then submit one in response. So we're going to put this amendment on. Other than the objection that was in the testimony here about the length of time on it, I think the language here in the House or the A2 amendment is better than the A3 amendment.
Thank you, Representative Nelson. Representative Lunan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In the testimony here, the comment was made that there's a county that renews every time with a firm because they trust them and they have low prices. That actually speaks right to Representative Schultz's point in that low price is relative. How would you know a price is low unless you go out for bids and find out what the market's doing? I think one of the primary functions of this exercise is to bring the market in. I I agree that the amendment maybe needs to be buffed up a little bit, but the basic concept of creating a competitive situation, I support strongly. I do not consider that knee-jerk. I don't consider it unnecessary. I think we need more of that in government where there's competition, and let the market determine what should be paid.
Okay. Representative Carlson?
Just as a follow-up, it reminded me of a situation a few years ago. I was quite involved with education issues, as I still am, but Minnesota is with the Midwest Higher Education Compact, and they put together a process for property insurance. And in the compact, over I think it was a dozen states at the time, 900 campuses. So I happened to comment to the University of Minnesota. I said, you know, you ought to look into that. Oh, we get low bids. We've got the best possible buys for our property insurance and one thing or another. And so I said, well, you ought to take a look, and left it at that, and I kind of left with their answer that they weren't going to do it. A couple weeks later, they came back, and they said, you know, we looked into it, and by golly, it's a better buy. You know, but they already thought they were getting the lowest possible bid. So I know your representative survey was pretty limited to two, but I picked up on what you were saying, because that was the exact situation that we experienced with the University of Minnesota and the Midwest Compact. By the way, if you deal with property insurance, counties are eligible with that compact as well. School districts, it was greatly expanded, so you can imagine what kind of a bidding process there is when you've got all those school districts, counties, higher ed institutions, but it started with just higher ed.
Now, if you're going to get to do an insurance commercial, I should get to do one, too.
Representative Johnson.
I have no vested interest, however.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to testify, did I understand correctly, as you look at the A3 amendment, that a county that has an ongoing relationship with a private auditing firm would have to put it out for bid then for others?
Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, that's my understanding. When that contract would expire, that they would then again have to put it out for bid, is my understanding of the A3. However, it sounds like folks are discussing alternatives. If you don't mind, Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, the only thing that I would state to Representative Lunin's comments, Representative Schultz's comments, and the intent of both of these amendments is, again, just to respectfully ask uniformity with treatment of all governments.
Okay. Fair enough. Representative Rembeck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think your point, I hope we didn't miss it, because it sounds to me like we're opening a tremendous can of worms with this amendment that is not very well thought out, would require a tremendous amount of work to make a, just for what, I guess. I mean, you know, professional contracts are happening with great frequency. We are not requiring a process, you know, of tremendous micromanaging. I think it's the best thing to do is vote no.
Okay. Representative Lunin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To that point, when I was on the school board, I was fully aware of the fact when there were bid environments that entities that were looking to get the work from the school district had hired people who used to be involved either as school superintendents because of the relationship, and were using that, assuming that that was predicated upon who would get the work or not, rather than a competitive bid. And if in fact we're opening a can of worms, I gladly open that can, that other entities, other governmental entities should be doing this as well, to make sure that we're getting functional spending of our taxpayer money, and that we're getting something for it, and we're getting it at the best possible rate.
Representative Schultz, I am going to have you go through your language again. I will comment that I do think it would be unfair just to have this apply to the counties. If it's going to go into play, it has to be for everybody, and I think that's just good government in general. So, Representative Schultz, if you can go through, and be slow about it, if you would.
Mm-hmm. So I propose that we modify on A3, line 1.8, so the beginning of the sentence would read, if counties pursue a CPA firm, bids or requests for proposal for an annual financial audit must be solicited by public notice, period. So I'll read it again. If counties pursue a CPA firm, bids or requests for proposal for an annual financial audit must be solicited by public notice, period. And then adopt the last sentence on the A2 amendment, line 1.10.111, that says, a county must send the notice to the state auditor and allow the state auditor to respond to the solicitation.
Madam Chair.
Representative Runbeck, and then if I would like to get feedback from the counties on that piece as well. Representative Runbeck.
Well, Madam Chair, I mean, this seems to invite then that we would be beyond CPA, you'd want to add lawyers, engineers, architects. I mean, why are we just piecemealing this? This is not an appropriate way to proceed. And I urge us to not take the amendment.
Well, but Madam Chair, just hang on a second. So, regardless, my preference today, Representative Schultz, is that we're not going to move. I would prefer, if you would, that we not move on your amendment. Like I said earlier, we are just laying this bill over, and I would rather that we spend more time looking this over. So that I would hope that we could work that out.
That's fine with me, but I think that this amendment applies to counties because it's in this bill. So I don't know if it's appropriate in this bill to amend this bill to apply to other units of government.
Okay. I just want to continue to have the conversation today because we do have folks from the counties. But I think that if going forward, when we do eventually take a look at this issue again, I would like to see this, if it's going to apply to the counties, it has to apply to everybody. So that's that, and then that opens, we need to make sure that we give everybody else the opportunity that would be impacted by this to speak to that as well. So I've got Representative Nash, then Representative Kahn.
Madam Chair, I won't belabor the point, and maybe Mr. Shepherd, you can help me out, and maybe from the counties, again, putting my mayoral hat on and Representative Lunan's school board, there are already existing rules as to how a public entity has to deal with bids. And this amendment seems to add on something that it already exists. I just think, again, Representative Schultz, I appreciate the drive to be transparent and bring market forces to bear, but there are already a lot of very specific statutes in existence as to how counties, cities, school boards have to deal with bids. So, I just think that the amendment needs a lot of tuning up.
Representative Kahn.
Well, let's point out that why we're doing this. We're doing this because Representative Howe, in the last session, gave more latitude to the counties to get a private CTA, which was originally under the state auditor. Other units of government and other kinds of audits were never covered by this bill. So general law right now, this is all we're talking about. We're not looking at all those other kinds of issues. And so this is a response in us, and we've seen that the state auditor is going to court to stop, to stop that additional discretion. This bill, and I explained at great length, probably more than I should have yesterday, how I've been back and forth on this issue at various times. I want to support the Anderson bill, but I also think that the Schultz Amendment is kind of a good idea. But I think Representative Schultz seems to be agreeing to withdraw it at this time, lay it over, and we'll all work on it. But the point is, the law doesn't cover all of those other audits. We've never suggested that they do it. If someone wants to do it, let them put in a separate bill to add that either to the state auditor or to make local units of doing it. We're dealing with general law, and the only reason we're probably dealing with it is because of what Representative Howe did in the last session. And so I think Representative Anderson's approach makes sense. And so, and I think all I'm saying is that everything that's been said surprisingly, that by the chair today I agree with.
Yeah.
Sorry, I shouldn't have put the surprisingly in there.
That's all right. But I do think that you pointed out a very good thing. I think that this could be its own piece of legislation on its own, quite honestly.
Well.
And I'd be happy to work with Representative Schultz on this. We're going to continue to work on it. I've got Representative Albright. Then we're going to do the counties, and then I've got nobody else on the list, and so then we're going to talk to Representative Schultz if she's going to remove her amendment. Then we need to go to the bill itself. So, and he's skipping. So, guys, with the amended.
Yes.
Any further comments?
Madam Chair, Representative Schultz, members of the committee, I won't have too many further comments. I'll defer to Mr. Messel, but the last thing I would urge is just uniformity. And, again, you might hear some of the same issues brought forth by the League of Minnesota Cities or the Minnesota Association of Townships of why this might not be necessary. However, at least then you're addressing all local units of government on an equal platform rather than just county. So thank you very much, Representative Kahn and Representative Schultz.
Mr. Messel.
I think Matt's covered it, so I will defer back to the committee. Thank you for your time.
Okay. Representative Schultz, do you have a motion?
So I'll withdraw my amendment until we see this bill again.
Okay. Or we could look. Yeah. All right. Folks, to House File 3077, is there anyone from the audience that wishes to speak to this bill? No, it's not amended. Oh, my amendment. As amended. That's right. I forgot about mine. Okay. Nobody from the audience? Members, any questions to the bill? Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And you know, we talk a lot here about transparency. And if I remember right, when the bill that came before us in past legislation, that legislature that moved this to an enterprise fund, that one of the reasons for this was transparency in how they charge, because doing it the way we did it in the past and what we'll be going back to of this auditor billing for their services, the money goes into the general fund, gets absorbed in all the money that's in the general fund, and then it's appropriated back, that there's a lack of transparency there as to why and how the auditor is charging for the fees that they charge, and which is the reason, if I remember right, that as far as how it goes, is one of the reasons why they wanted to move to the enterprise fund, because then there's a direct tie to this is what we bring in, this is what we charge, and we have to cover our charges, so it's less convoluted as to finding out how they charge or why they charge for it. And I guess that's my comment. I don't know if this is the right way to go. I mean, either way, we do it either way in the state government. And just a matter, if we go to this, we still need to make sure that we're funding the auditor's office properly so that they can do the duties that they're assigned to do, and making sure that our state tax dollars that we send out to local units of government are being spent properly. And that is the charge duty of the office of the state auditor. So we want to make sure we don't, despite ourselves, cut funding from them because of some perceived misuse of their funds, and then end up having problems with other units of government. So that's just my comment.
Well, thank you. Members, any other comments or questions? Okay, seeing none, I renew my motion for House File 3077 to be laid over for possible inclusion as amended. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Actually, we don't have to vote on it, too.
No.
Boy, sorry, guys. Too early in the morning. So there we go. That's what we're going to do. Members, that is all that we have, and we will see you next week. We are adjourned.